Hi, guys and gals and creatures in between. This is Atrevida, and welcome to Conversations on a Tightrope. Tonight, we will explore some poetry, and I'd like to share what I've learned. So first, I would like to talk about a studio called Hen House Studios in California. It was founded in 2001. Hen House Studios is an independent record label and documentary film video production company located in Venice, California. During the first 5 years of the company's existence, Hen House recorded bands for free in the exchange for the right to film them. The Hen House Experience. Director Harlan Steinberger describes this time as extremely fruitful, as there was no exchange of money between Hen House and the musicians who recorded there. What we were left with was a pressure-free, extremely creative environment that led to not only great performances, but to one heck of a good time. Today, Hen House Studios no longer records bands for free, but still concentrates on developing musicians, making music and videos, and its ever-evolving music label. I found it very interesting because I found this wonderful recording on YouTube. It's from Ray Manzarek and Michael C. Ford, Jim Morrison, and I would like to play this for you. And it should, this goes.
Hi, my name is Ray Manzarek. I'm working with Michael C. Ford, a good friend and poet, and we're just making some poetry and music. In the beginning, there were beatniks playing poetry with jazz musicians.
Ray, do you want to take a solo break right after?
I'd always want to take a solo break.
The jazz musicians improvised around what the beatniks were reading.
We're on two tracks, right?
Yeah. And it was a lot of fun. It was great. There was some marvelous jam sessions were held and just wonderful things going on. But ultimately, it didn't last because the musicians weren't composing for the poems. So what I try to do is compose things to his poetry. I read his poetry as he's reading his poetry. So what I make are small compositions that are improvisations, but I know I'm going to release, I'm going to stop, I'm going to break back into the rhythm, I'm going to accent what he is saying. The music is an underpinning to the poetry. So that's what I try to do, and I think that's the future, the new direction of poetry and music, treating the poet as a lead singer and playing behind the lead singer.
Extreme Unction for James Douglas Morrison. Faces crumble like flame-cold Chinese lamps. Skins peel as the cemetery earth is turning away, Jimbo. We remember the lizard with dreams of lost grasshoppers in his sleep, as in your strange sleep now. Jimbo. No funeral march, no media circus wagon procession, no grieving mistresses, no wife, no wake, no wail, no black lace crucifixes in an open tomb, no acid spitting tribute, no homage of liquor and blood, no goopy gossip column for teenage America. All this will come later.
The poet has a sense of rhythm. Poetry is all rhythmic. It's the rhythm of the words, and of course, what is music, but chord changes on top of that rhythm. So a poet puts verbal meaning on top of rhythm, and musicians, instrumentalists, put melody and chord changes on top of rhythm. And that's why I can play with poets, because we're all doing the same rhythm thing.
One month before you bail out, Al Verno parchment wings transported your poem, which will continue to burn beside exploitation fires, fanned by fans who will pretend they knew you. Desperate parasites feeding off your poor dead bones, the vampires of journalism turning your blood into a money hustle. Jesus, it was a strange funeral, Jimbo. We were all dressed in white raiment, as profound as snow. Snow that wanted to fall like pale cicadas in Paris.
I hope you enjoyed that. When I was Googling and I found Hen House Studios, I thought that was, if you'd ever like to see that on YouTube, just Google on YouTube Ray Manzarek, M-A-N-Z-A-R-A-K, and Michael C. Ford, Hen House, and you will get to see also the video. It's quite impressive. Now, the other poet that I learned about by finding out about Hen House was a poet called Kenneth Rex Roth. And they say that arguably one of the most talented and respected artists of his generation. He was not only a venerated poet, but an essayist, literary critic, translator, and painter. Perhaps most significantly, Rex Roth was considered the instigator of the San Francisco Renaissance. There are five of his poems that were uploaded to YouTube by Poems Being Read. That was the handle on the person who brought them and I guess is reading them. One is Oaxaca, 1925. The second is GIC to HIR, which responds to an encyclopedia volume. The second poem is The Advantages of Learning. The third poem is Climbing Milestone Mountain, August 27, 1937. And the last poem is entitled No, with an exclamation mark. So I would really like you to listen to these poems. They're quite beautiful. And hold on one second.
You were a beautiful child, with troubled face, green eyelids, and black lace stockings. We met in a filthy bar. You said, "My name is Nada. I don't want anything from you. I will not take from you. I will give you nothing." I took you home down alleys, splattered with moonlight and garbage and cats, to your desolate, disheveled room. Your feet were dirty. The lacquer was chipped on your fingernails. We spent a week, hand in hand, wandering entranced together through a sweltering summer of guitars and gunfire and tropical leaves and black shadows in the moonlight, a lifetime ago. It is late at night, cold and damp. The air is filled with tobacco smoke. My brain is worried and tired. I pick up the encyclopedia, the volume GIC to HAR. It seems I have read everything in it so many other nights like this. I sit staring empty-headed at the article Grosbeak, listening to the long rattle and pound of freight cars and switch engines in the distance. Suddenly, I remember coming home from swimming in Ten Mile Creek over the long moraine in the early summer evening, my hair wet, smelling of water weeds and mud. I remember a sycamore in front of a ruined farmhouse, and instantly and clearly the revelation of a song of incredible purity and joy, my first rose-breasted grosbeak, facing the low sun, his body suffused with light. I was motionless and cold in the hot evening, until he flew away, and I went on knowing, in my 12th year, one of the great things of my life had happened. 30 factories empty their refuse in the creek. The farm has given way to an impoverished suburb. On the parched lawns are starlings, alien and aggressive. And I am on the other side of the continent, 10 years in an unfriendly city. I am a man with no ambitions and few friends, wholly incapable of making a living, growing no younger, fugitive from some just doom, lonely, ill-clothed, what does it matter? At midnight I make myself a jug of hot white wine and cardamom seeds. In a torn gray robe and old beret, I sit in the cold, writing poems, drawing nudes on the crooked margins of my imagination. For a month now, wandering over the Sierras, a poem had been gathering in my mind, details of significance and rhythm, the way poems do, but still lacking a focus. Last night I remembered the date and it all began to grow together and take on purpose. We sat up late while Deneb moved over the zenith, and I told Marie all about Boston, how it looked that last terrible week, how hundreds stood weeping, impotent in the streets that last midnight. I told her how those hours changed the lives of thousands, how America was forever a different place afterwards for many. In the morning, we swam in the cold, transparent lake, the blue damsel flies on all the reeds like millions of narrow metallic flowers, and I thought of you behind the grill in Dedham, Vanzetti, saying, who would ever have thought we would make this history? Crossing the brilliant mile-square meadow, illuminated with asters and cyclamen, the pollen of the lodgepole pines drifting with the shifting wind over it, and the blue and sulfur butterflies drifting with the wind, I saw you in the sour prison light, saying, goodbye, comrade. In the basin, under the crest, where the pines end and the Sierra primrose begins, a party of lawyers was shooting at a whiskey bottle. The bottle stayed on its rock. Nobody could hit it. Looking back over the peaks and canyons from the last lake, the pattern of human beings seemed simpler than the diagonals of water and stone, climbing the chute, up the melting snow and broken rock. I remembered what you said about Sacco, how it slipped your mind, and you demanded it be read into the record. Traversing below the ragged arete, one cheek pressed against the rock, the wind slapping the other, I saw you both marching in an army, you with the red and black flag, Sacco with the rattlesnake banner. I kicked steps up the last snowbank and came to the indescribably blue and fragrant pulmonium and the dead sky and the sterile crystalline granite and final monolith of the summit. These are the things that will last a long time, Vanzetti. I am glad that once on your day I have stood among them. Some day mountains will be named after you and Sacco. They will be here, and your name with them. When these days are but a dim remembering of the time when man was wolf to man, I think men will be remembering you for a long time, standing on mountains, many men, a long time, comrade. I have closed my ears. I refuse to listen to my mouth weeping. I have closed my mouth, I refuse the taste of my weeping eyes. I have closed my eyes on the past as you want it remembered for the rest of life, called forever. I was not there. I was away, at the poles, in the Amazon. I am not going to have been where you say I was. You fancy you can force me to have lived the past you want. You are wrong.
Okay, so that was some of his poems, and I think I certainly want to get a book and read some more of them because he was quite significant. Now, what Hen House did was they created in 2010 a trailer of a movie they made about Kenneth Rexroth. It was called The Signature of All Things, and it served as a passionate ode to the artist, documenting a magical night of tribute to the genius of Kenneth Rexroth on the 100th anniversary of his birth. The people in... I'm going to play the trailer. There are many people who pay tribute to him in this trailer. He was born 1905 and died in 1982. In this order, you will hear, I don't know if you know of any of these names, but if you try, if you do, you may want to think of who they are. Uri Hertz will be the first that speaks. Then following him will be Michael C. Ford, Kerry Tomlinson, Morgan Gibson, Aram Saroyan, Philomene Long, Eloise Klein Healy, Bonnie Tamblyn, Sprague Graydon, and then there is a rooster vocal, and that's Bob Brantz. There's James Cushing, Ruben Guevara, Brad Dorff, Louis McAdams, Uri Hertz, Carol Tinka, Doran Robbins, and Mariana Rexroth. So I'm going to play that trailer. But just before I do that, on these five poems that were just read, there were some comments, and I would sometimes like to read some comments that are on YouTube. And one gentleman, Andre Norris, too, that was his handle. Yes, Rexroth seems very generous of spirit. And thanks very much for taking time to listen and comment. And someone, he also said he sounds like he was a good person to know. People who spend a lot of their time promoting others tend to be. Another fine inclusion to your series. So here I would like to now play the trailer. And one moment, please. Here it is.
We'll be here and celebrate 100 years of Kenneth Rexroth.
This evening is very simply a respectful look at contributions Kenneth Rexroth donated to the world culture by those of us who knew him, were influenced by him, mentored by him, and even those of us who were inclined to just accept what he contributed to our lives with his life and his work.
Turned to me and said quietly, "We should write of love what we wish to remember.
For from it much else flowed." He prayed from the Latin breviary.
"I remember you in Kyoto, where you wanted to die, before crossing the Pacific to California.
There was a guy with a bag of groceries heading up the hill. I said, 'Papa, that looks exactly like that guy on the album cover, Kenneth Rexroth.'
'You were really a man, just like all of us.'
I fell in love with you, Athos, long ago, when you were still an ungainly little girl.
And the peace deer are gentle and graceful, and they have beautiful eyes. They hurt no one but themselves, the males, and only for love. Men have invented several ways, several 1,000 ways of killing them.
I read poetry to jazz because I like to. I like poetry. I like to read to people. I like jazz.
Said he was at a taco truck one night, watching the chef cut up the carnitas for tacos. He said that energy and that precision and that power reminded you of my performance.
I am a man with no ambition and a few friends, wholly incapable of making a living, growing no younger, fugitive from some just doom, lonely, ill-clothed. What does it matter?
If someone were to call Lewis McAdams an engaged savior of the LA River, I'm sure, very modestly, he would offer due respect to many others who have been active in its preservation.
Most of the world's poetry is artifice, construction. It has grown so overcooked, it cannot be digested.
The evil of the world covets your living flesh.
The ache, the heart is never well, the incurable pain, the iron work of time, the shrinking web of life, the gray, unquiet ocean, under uninhabited fog, the roar which always begins and is never still, which nothing will ever stop.
Mentioned Doran Robbins being part of the production team that brought Third Rail into being. Doran Robbins is diametrically opposed to everything politically evil and rotten and incontinent and corrupt in this country.
Dear Corey Lai Jacobson, there are few of us now. Soon there will be none. We were comrades together. We believed we would see with our own eyes the new world where man was no longer wolf to man, but men and women were all brothers and lovers together.
Believe in Christmas and birthdays and Easter rabbits. Believe in all those fugitive compounds of nature, all doomed to waste away and go out. Always be true to these things. They are all there is. Never give up this savage religion for the blood-drenched civilized abstractions of the rascals who live by killing you and me.
And all the birds of the deep sea rise over the luxury liners and scream, you killed him, you killed him, you in your Brooks Brothers suit, Kenneth Rexroth. Thank you. Good night.
All right, everyone. So that's Kenneth Rexroth. I hope you get interested enough to read some of his poetry. I'm going to take a break before we go into other poetry, and I'd like to play, all of you know Queen Latifah, and she is a favorite of mine. I would like to play Poetry Man by Queen Latifah.
Yeah. you are the genie, and all I ask for is your smile each time I rub the lamp. La 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 la. When I am with you, I have a giggling teenage crush, then I'm a sultry vamp, yeah. A sultry vamp. Whoa, talk to me some more. You don't have to go. You're the poetry man. You make things alright, yeah.
I love that song, and I love Queen Latifah. So I have to tell you, I'm going to go a little bit into the introduction to slam and deaf poetry, but I'm so excited because one of my dearest peers, programmer here at WGXC, and wonderful community person and creative. You talk about poetry being creative. Well, this lady has so much creativity coming out of her, we don't know how to stop it. And she showed up, Pamela Badilla, in a little while will be reciting a couple of her poems. So let me first talk about Poetry Slam is a competition at which poets read or recite original work, or more rarely that of others. These performances are then judged on a numeric scale by previously selected members of the audience. Mark Smith is credited with starting the Poetry Slam at the Get Me High Lounge in Chicago in November 1984. In July 1986, the Slam moved to its permanent home, the Green Mill Jazz Club. In 1990, the first National Poetry Slam took place in Fort Mason, San Francisco. As of 2010, the National Poetry Slam has grown and currently features approximately 80 certified teams each year, culminating in 5 days of competition. Slams have spread all over the world, with slam scenes in Canada, Germany, Sweden, France, Austria, Israel, Ukraine, Russia, Switzerland, Nepal, the Netherlands, Portugal, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, the Czech Republic, Serbia, Bosnia, Denmark, South Korea, Japan, India, and Greece. So there is a lot of controversy about deaf and slam poetry, but a lot of people like it, obviously. Let me see. The competition, they have open slams. They have theme slams. I'm not going to go too much into it. The Poetry Slam Inc. holds several national and world poetry slams, including the Individual World Poetry Slam, the National Poetry Team Slam, and the Women of the World Poetry Slam. The current 2010 IWPS champion is Rudy Francisco. The current 2010 National Poetry Slam team champions are St. Paul, Minnesota. The current 2011 Women of the World Poetry Slam champion is Teresa Davis. Now, let me go down to academia. As of 2011, four poets who have competed at National Poetry Slam have won National Endowment of the Arts Fellowships for Literature. Hal Sierowitz, who was on the New Eureka Poets Cafe Poetry Slam in 93. Jeffrey McDaniel, he was on numerous D.C. and California slam teams in the mid-1980s. Andrianne Sue, who was on the New Eureka Poets Cafe Poetry Slam in 91. And Christine O'Keefe Aptowitz, who was on the New York City Urbana Poetry Slam team in 98, 2001, 2003, and 2010. So I'm going to go now to Bob Holman, who founded the New Eureka Poetry Slam, has taught for years at the New School, Bard, Columbia, and NYU. I have, he'll give you an example, and I have this recording, and I want you to know it's also now in the colleges. Berklee College of Music in Boston is now available as a minor course of study. And let me play. Hold on 1 second. Be patient with me. And here we go.
So, as usual, the poet must do the work herself. Thus, I've written this poem called Walking Brooklyn Bridge. Hey, it's a world premiere. First time this poem's ever been read. Right here. Tonight. This stunning stand, lifting, rocketing towards sun, Icarus's dream, the span pointing the empty sky where towers had been, the day the clouds rolled back to allow a little light in here. Manhattan touches, rolling back, bridges landing, police get educated here. The sick enter all the doors here. Trinity Church spire, tilty above, below, foaming, probing. Here, the city erects. Police car waits like a cat, and Brooklyn shyly beckons. Love ends. Chinese father in a light running suit, his daughter in fashionable mixed plaids. Manhattan Bridge searches north, crossing like an acrobat, and south then to the Verrazano, stretched between the glass caverns of wall. Tall ships, now a tourist attraction. South Street Seaport, om. Lay the words on you, sprinkle organic jimmies. East River is inviting, ah, blue-green this morning, twinkling suicide fence running alongside. Equidistant, no problem. All wall, spread out, crazy quilt to the southwards, thrums and thunder speeding cars, a bench to helicopters over Governor's Island, uptown blocks by Projects TIFF, Empire State peaks between, Manhattan Bridge looming over FDR, attracting buzzing small plane, two dogs, their masters in matching red berets, and here at long last, the long cables swoop, rough roped steel, anchored through hand-cut boardwalk, gaudy street lamps, rusting handrails, change the ballast, here the crossing wires, the famous photo of the workers spread across the Dada sky. pedestrians to the right, bicycles to the left, walking the center electric line, illuminating globes, parting the night opera, the flag atop the Arabic doorways, negative space, and the first cell phone of the day. Oh, Manhattan, now spooling over proprietary river, opening the tower shields, 14,000 the total mileage of wire rope. Roebling's invention, that's how he got the job. Noted on the plaques, the official plaques, the official garbage can. You are now officially on Brooklyn's side. Williamsburg as seen through Manhattan. Queens, Mary's, Brooklyn. Sea wharf, slowly rising river of movement. Staten Island and her ferry setting out. Tourists with video cameras, cell phone after cell phone, some in heavy winter coats this blazing Sunday fall, others in shorts and t-shirts, insist global warming, it's a daily occurrence. The cables slide back to rest the midpoint balance. Oh, the official bench is here. Why not sit down and write a poem, a hymn? Sailboat, motorboat, circle line, commerce slow this Sunday morn. Again began the slight descent, the rockets, the Arabian sights, the looming elegance of sheer geometry stone. Someone's left a note and a rose. Korean soldiers in gold peacoats. Cables lift and fall. The watchtower announces itself. The now familiar descent, Earth itself rushing up, parents pointing, children not looking, surly teens with hands dug in, tension-packed lifts shot, Brooklyn beckons, the park that borders the river, the ferry landing with no ferry. Exit signs for the BQE, land lashes out, the trees, the autumn trees of Cadman Plaza. Over my shoulder, the other bridges come to rest in congruent conjunctions. Oblivious baby in oversized stroller. An hour's extra sleep today. The smells of spice and rot and salt and gasoline. The fence finally giving pause, gratitude and stress and sweep at the moment of choice. Walk up swirling, splitting subway to the sky, river to the stars as I turn and walk Walt home.
Okay, that was Bob Holman at the 10th anniversary Urbana party. Bob Holman. Now, I'm going to have our wonderful Pamela Badilla recite two of her very own poems, and I'll turn this over to her. Pam?
Okay, good evening. Thanks a lot again, Joan, to invite me here. I just want to introduce this before I read it. Generally, when I write poetry, I write it either for myself or as a poetic narrative to accompany one of my plays. This one, I'd like to read, it's from a play called A Fairy's Tale, which was actually a very crazily imaginative fantasy, a fairy tale, in effect, about a fairy's tale. A fairy who's very, very arrogant and very full of herself, thinking that her beauteous tale was what made her be important, that she had to go on a journey to find what was more simple and real, and in that adventure, accompanied by the very little fairies, fairy dusters, who she ignored, but who made her realize that it's the little people, the little things that you don't consider that might make you realize what's great about yourself. It's your humility. And the fairy's tale was introduced by this poem. It was the narrative to introduce her. It goes like this. Once, a while ago, it seems a fairy who cared not for dreams believed her tale to be the thing that gave her joy and made her sing. She did not care to run and play or dance in pastures through the day. She could not see the fun in that. They invited her, but were turned down flat. It was a lovely tale of blue and other brilliant colors, too, with feathers, fur, and fancy fluff. The tail was made of wondrous stuff. But still, it was a tail. That's it. And there she was, obsessed with it. And of course, the story goes on where she realizes that to find what's valuable in your own self is to first realize that you're one of a kind. And in that is the value of anyone, fairy or human or anybody else. You find your true nature by being true to who you are yourself. Which brings me to the second poem, which was designed in my mind to celebrate the uniqueness of each of us. And I'm greatly inspired by traditional folk stories from around the world. And we've written plays over the years engaging us in those kinds of understandings of humanity throughout the universe, how we have so much in common. And we need to realize that more so than the trivial differences which have caused us so much pain and suffering. This year, Jata Jata International Folkloric Theater, we celebrated our 10th year of community theater with a play, The Rooster and the Crocodile. And this is a poem that has to do with the theme of that play. By being one, you are stronger. By being yourself, you are unique to this world, and you give the gift of your uniqueness. Instead of trying to be something or someone else and fitting in where you don't really belong, you belong in your own self, in your own mind, heart, and soul. And it's only there you can prosper and be great. So this was a poem about that simpleness of us. And it says, and so we celebrate with joy beneath the sun. We sing, we dance. We give great thanks that each of us are one and only one of any kind, with a destiny to live, love and tender kindness being our true gifts we give. And when we all do realize that that's what life's about, our passage here is peaceful. And there's no need to scream and shout or whose God is God and what is true. Such things won't be resolved. It's but through our humble humanness that problems can be solved. We hope that that was the message received by our audience this year, and I'm very happy to be able to share that with you this evening. Thank you again, Joan.
Oh, Pamela, that was absolutely beautiful, really. I couldn't have asked for something any better in this show, for my first attempt at having a poetry show.
It's a pleasure.
You did me such an honor.
Thank
being
you.
Here and doing
Thank
that. So I'm going to have you, I was going to have Maya Angelou do her poem, because I had a recording, but it's, I would much rather have you recite Phenomenal Woman by Maya Angelou, and I have it here for you.
It's the first time public reading of this, so I'm going to try to go
through. Don't worry about it. She's good at it.
I want to introduce, by the way, in the background, I hope you're hearing the music of the mbiri or the sansa, sanchi, kalimba, many names for this beautiful finger piano played by Andre Badila in the background. So now I'm going to switch over to the other side.
Yes, switch seats so that this way you can read it. I can't move this. Andre, you're such a doll.
I remember this poem. It's
beautiful.
It's a good poem to inspire women, because you know the whole look about how you have to have a certain shape and size and hair and skin to be beautiful and appreciated. This poem goes out to any woman to recognize, you know, you are fabulous. You are wonderful. You are phenomenal. Pretty women wonder where my secret lies. Well, I'm not cute or built to suit a fashion model's size. But when I start to tell them, they think I'm telling lies. I say, it's in the reach of my arms, the span of my hips, the stride of my step, the curl of my lips. I'm a woman. Phenomenally. Phenomenal woman. That's me. I walk into a room and just as cool as you please. And to a man, the fellows stand or fall down on their knees. Then they swarm around me, a hive of honeybees. I say, it's the fire in my eyes and the flash of my teeth, the swing in my waist and the joy in my feet. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Phenomenal woman, that's me. Men themselves have wondered what they see in me. They try so much, but they can't touch my inner mystery. When I try to show them, they say they still can't see. I say, it's the arch of my back, the sun of my smile, the ride of my breasts, the grace of my style. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Phenomenal woman, that's me. Now you understand just why my head's not bowed. I don't shout or jump about or have to talk real loud. When you see me passing, it ought to make you proud. I say, it's in the click of my heels, the bend of my hair, the palm of my hand, the need of my care. 'Cause I'm a woman, phenomenally. Phenomenal woman, that's me.
All right. I mean, tell me, that wasn't a beautiful recitation of Phenomenal Woman. I'm really just, I don't know how to express how glad I really, I'm really happy that you came.
Likewise, I'm
and,
very glad to be here.
I could go ahead and I have all these other recordings, but you were more important. It's always more important to have someone come and share their creativity. It's I don't know why everybody hoards it. They really should share it because it inspires others. So I'm so glad that you came. But I really have to end this particular segment because I don't want to leave out those poor creatures in between who, and let me see if I can find this. I had it in front of me, but I got so excited because my friend is here that here it is. Okay, everyone, sorry. I took a little longer than usual with that introduction. The Pink Panther is telling me it's time for the animal connection, and I don't want to. And since we were doing the poetry, I decided that I would read a couple of my haikus that I did years ago on animals. And one was, fingers feel so good while scratching under my chin, purring for us both. Then, being myself immersed in love with my pets, no one to spoil it. They are lifesavers, purring softly near my heart, sharing solitude. Lugubrious barks, where is he? Where's my master? Drinking in some bar. Then the last one that I wrote when I was in the kitchen many years ago with my cat Hamlet, I was watching him, I was doing something and I was watching him sleep. The silence deafens until a reverberating and audible electric current explodes. Awake now, and upon concentrated effort, stretching until paws and tail connect, my cat, with eyes lugubrious, forgives at the sound of the can opener. Okay, enough for my poems. I did want to read, very importantly, that there is a Captive Primate Safety Act introduced in the U.S. Senate. Born Free USA again is spearheading an important congressional initiative to protect non-human primates. Today, U.S. Senators Barbara Boxer, D. California, David Vitter, R. Louisiana, and Richard Blumenthal, D. Connecticut, introduced the Captive Primate Safety Act, S-1324, which prohibits interstate commerce in monkeys, apes, and other primates in the exotic pet trade. Please ask your two U.S. senators to co-sponsor the bill today. The commercial trade in primates involves tremendous suffering and grave dangers to human health and safety. These innocent animals are often confined in small cages and have their teeth or fingernails extracted. We can't allow animals to be mutilated in the name of companionship. Non-human primates also pose disease risks, including transmission of Ebola, tuberculosis, and herpes B. Even though nearly half of the states already prohibit private possession of these wild animals as, quote, pets, primates are easily obtained over the internet and through out-of-state dealers and auctions, making federal legislation necessary to support the efforts of state law enforcement. I hope you will promote the passing of this bill. Now, I also want you to ask the Senate to support S-5363-CARA, C-A-A-R-A, and this is from Best Friends Animal Society. It's the Companion Animal Access and Rescue Act. It is an important piece of life-saving legislation written to both improve the standards of care for shelter animals and provide needed access to shelters for qualified animal rescue organizations so they can save the lives of homeless shelter pets. And this month, the New York State Senate will address unfinished business from the 2011 legislative session, which officially ended June 30th. The bill was introduced by Assemblyman Mika Kellner, sponsored in the Senate by Senator Robach, and co-sponsored by Senators Avella, Ball, Lanza, and O'Mara. Because of the critical importance of this legislation, Best Friends asks you to please write to your state senators and ask them to vote for CARA, C-A-A-R-A, in July. So there you go. That's my good deed for the day. And I was going to read something else, but I want to read this little bit inspiring person I just discovered in Brooklyn, New York, Jimmy Beattie. He's a community cat caregiver, Brooklyn, New York. And when you have lived as long as Jimmy Beattie, you do what you can to give life meaning. In his case, the 81-year-old has made it his mission since his retirement at age 62, he's now 81, to feed feral cats in the neighborhood around the set of the television series The Good Wife. Every day, rain or shine, Beattie feeds the dozen or so cats. He provides plastic bowls with fresh water and a diet of canned and dry cat food. Buying the food locally, he spends $150 to $170 per month on cat food alone. He receives donations from his landlady, from friends, and now from a fund set up by Best Friends to help with the cost of cat food. One of Beattie's friends raised money to humanely trap the cats to spay or neuter and then release them back into the area. One of the organizations that offers assistance, so many people like BD can keep helping homeless pets, is the Save Kitty Foundation in New York City. So kudos to Jimmy BD. Before I close up, I would like to now say that this is time for Life is Bearable When. And I came up with Life is Bearable When you request someone to return your call, and they do. Now, fortune cookie wisdom is, ideas are like children. There are none so wonderful as your own. And I just have to throw this in too. This is a word of the week. It's called pecksniffian, which means, and I really want you to use this one, hypocritically and smugly affecting benevolence or high moral principles. One quote, one way it was used by H.L. Mencken in Damn, A Book of Calumny. The men who do things in the world, the men worthy of admiration and imitation, are men constitutionally incapable of any such pecksniffian stupidity. And is pecksniffian is named after Seth Pecksniff, a character in Martin Chuzzlewit, a novel, 1843 by Charles Dickens. Well, folks, looks like it's time for me to say goodbye.